Welcome, folks. This is the End Evil podcast. Evil is the destruction of freedom. That quote comes from a book by Jeremy Locke, The End of All Evil. I got some copies right here. So contact me to get your copy. If you go to endevil.life, there's on the side of every episode, there's links. And you can hit one of those links and give me your address and send the payment, and I will send you this book and some End Evil stickers. Really cool stickers that look like this. So I've already had some people take me up on that, and I appreciate that. So that, and I wanted to encourage people to check out End Evil Connect. That's the newsletter I'm going to be putting out regularly for the show. So if you haven't yet signed up for End Evil Connect, also go to endevil.life and click on the newsletter button, and make sure you get on that list, because there's going to be insider stuff only for people that sign up to that email list. And so we need to get things moving, folks, because it's a stagnant world out there. And that's why today I'm bringing to you a very dynamic speaker and one of my best friends too, Will Keller. Thanks so much for joining us today on the End Evil podcast.
Oh, thanks, Chris. It's always a pleasure to be back on here, brother.
Yeah, I look back, and our last actual me and you episode was the Renaissance of Reason in 2022. And Will and I first connected way back in 2020. I was just getting ready to publish my End Evil podcast series, and that was when COVID hit. And so I just was looking for people in the natural law community, and Will was out there running a Facebook groups. And so I hit him up, and he just had conversations with me, and we talked on the phone. We wound up meeting up and camping, and we were fast friends. We had so much to talk about, and we've been meeting ever since. Now we're on Freedom Under Natural Law Conference. Number 4 has been concluded, and we're working on number 5. And it's been an awesome journey. Will's been with me almost every week, getting my show going on the One Great Work Network. And it's been an awesome trip. So,
it has, man. It's been an honor and a pleasure to be friends with you, to grow together, to collaborate. To see your journey and your show. I mean, you're one of the most consistent, content creators with putting out a show every week. I mean, I don't know exactly. It's definitely been many years that you've been showing up every Thursday doing the End Evil podcast. It's badass, man. It just shows your willpower, your dedication, and your care. And that's inspiring for me, man.
Thanks, Will. And folks, if you're out there, I could really use some help on the donate too. Go to endevil.life and hit the donate page. There's a couple people that give me $1 every month. And if a lot more people did that, it would make my life so much easier. I still have to work, to do everything I do here, and it's all out of my own pocket and my own time, other than the couple people that have really been awesome that have been donating a little bit. So either donate or get the book, The End of All Evil. That also makes a small donation to the podcast and keeps things going. But otherwise, share the show, subscribe, and I also want to recommend people check out Will's work. You got willkeller.com now?
That's right. Yep, willkeller.com, and that's just my central hub. You can get to all my other platforms from there.
Awesome. Yeah, but I wanted to get back into the topic of Renaissance, because we've had some very synchronous events recently. I got inspired to really kick my own butt and get my book written, thanks to Sarah Cross, who's we just did an interview together, Sarah Cross and I, and we're gonna I'm gonna have that on an upcoming show. She's an amazing individual, and she inspired me to get going on my book after Funnel 4 conference, and that's what I've been doing ever since the conference. And I asked Will to write a foreword, and I just gave him open rein. I gave him the copy of the book I had at the time, and he read it, and he wrote The Renaissance Man. Forward called The Renaissance Man. So I'd like to hear a little bit about your inspiration for that forward you wrote, Will. I really like it. I'm looking forward to sharing this book.
Yeah, actually, your book is fantastic. I'm really excited for that to kind of go public and get into the minds and hearts of individuals. So I'm excited for that next venture, and obviously an honor to contribute to that project with the foreword. And I was kind of pondering on what direction I was going to go. This is the first time I've, you know, written a foreword for a book. And then I kind of just, you know, simplified it and thought about our relationship, our journey. And the episode that you mentioned earlier about the Renaissance of Reason came to mind, and kind of the ideals and the concepts that we talked about. And following that path of what is a modern Renaissance? What does that mean? What is the significance and the attributes of to be a Renaissance man? And it clicked, because for me, you absolutely meet all of those standards of what it means to be a modern Renaissance man. And we need that revival of these principles and characteristics. And that's what inspired me to write, to contribute that to the foreword of your book. And it makes a great conversation for the greater whole on what that means for individuals and for the collective.
Absolutely. What we really need is a rebirth of spirit, and a rebirth of old values, even old simple values, a rebirth of care. And we need that massively through all people. There's really kind of a sad lack of empathy in our world, in the modern super materialistic world. And rather than kind of going on and naming all the issues and problems that I see in the world, it just makes a lot more sense to me to encourage what needs to happen to make it better, to make that change. And we've had times in history where there have been a renaissance of people getting more interested in art, people caring more about expression, people caring more about philosophy. We look at the time of Socrates, and then we had Aristotle, and then we had the time with the Stoics. And a lot of these people weren't necessarily treated well in their societies, but there have been these births and rebirths of resurgences of people that really care about what's best for all of humanity and for the general minds of people. And I think that's where we're at again in humanity's situation. We're at the crux of a real decline. And there's an opportunity to turn that around and create a renaissance, a rebirth. But that will require people like us managing a lot of stuff. And you're a good example too, Will. You know, you'll have your chickens, dogs, cats, all kinds of animals. I've seen you save little creatures that in your backyard, various animals that come around. Mm-hmm. And you're like, you get into farmer kind of permaculture style growing things, herbalism, and then you're like really technical, your skills on the computer and online and promoting stuff. And then you also like know how to put in blinds like no one's business. And I'm sure that also being a handy guy with tools, you know, that reverberates into everything you do terms of having that mind for fixing things and manipulating things and making them fit and getting a screw to go in a hole upside down when you're on a ladder, you know,
problem solving, baby.
Those are big kind of skills in today's world that I'm just amazed how many people don't have. And, you know, you can't just generate all these skills out of nowhere. They're all things that take consistent work. But I think having the ability to be good at different things and keep on pushing forward on multiple levels is necessary in today's world, especially like now with the advent of AI, like it's like the printing press or totally things that are going to change the world. And if we don't keep up with it to some extent, we're going to fall behind. So I'd like you to talk a little bit about what it means to keep, I call it a one foot in both worlds. Mm-hmm. Like you're a farmer, you know, almost a farmer kind of gardener. But then on the other hand, you're like this highly technical computer whiz, you know. So how do you keep a foot in both worlds in a world that's so complicated?
Great, great question. And this is exactly what it means to be a modern Renaissance man. I kind of had a realization, even in my construction work of installing window coverings and handyman type of stuff. I obviously a huge influence from my childhood, and you know, my dad being a journeyman contractor and running big projects and stuff like that. But it was the ability to utilize reason and problem solving was such a huge attribute to be raised with, and not even raised with, but to be held up on a pedestal as this virtue that must be seen and used and applied. My dad was huge on critical thinking and problem solving, right? I mean, he even had a phrase that he would say that, oh, dads can fix everything. And, you know, it's an analogy. It's a metaphor for there is a solution for every problem. It's just, are you willing to go on that journey to diagnose, get the understand the correct problem, and then play and find a solution to that problem? And that had a huge impact, obviously, my whole life, even to now. And it is that attribute that is lacking nowadays. So sure, I'm a, you know, jack of all trades. And that stems from utilizing that reason and that critical thinking. If I want to do something, then I can go through that process of critical thinking, applying the trivium, come to know and learn and understand something. And that doesn't mean the totality of all or even of a subject, but enough of an understanding, a correct understanding, to apply it and use that in life, in the world. And that's kind of the level and the standard that we need to get to. So yeah, being a father of a daughter, unschooling, you know, permaculture, making tinctures, gardening, construction, all of these things, the technical aspect that you mentioned, all of these trades, they're kind of rooted in that one attribute of reason and understanding, problem solving, and critical thinking. And then also paired, you know, married to that creative aspect, that sacred feminine of wanting to express yourself, wanting to learn something and play with that. And I think those two things are extremely powerful. And that's how we get to the first steps to, you know, to jump on the path of what it means to have a modern renaissance. When I was at work, this was probably like last year, I started taking inventory on how many men do not know or want to learn how to do, to fix something very basic, whether it's change a doorknob, hang a picture, put a curtain up. I mean, really, really basic stuff that any human being can figure out on their own just by trial and error, right? Let alone just basic research. But having seeing men do that and having women tell me, like wives saying, oh, my husband is not handy whatsoever. He doesn't even know what a hammer is. He doesn't have a drill or anything like that. That was a huge realization to kind of reflect and see and notice how far off the beaten path, not only from the masculine aspect, but humanity in general. Yeah, we'll start with that. That was a big realization for me.
Heck yeah. I should for the people listening, Renaissance, if you don't know, it comes from renascere, which is grow anew. Mm-hmm. Or Latin was renascere, renasci, to be born again or rise again, to reappear or re-anew. And I like this term because people talk about revolution. You know, we need a revolution. And I'm like, no, we don't. We don't want a revolution. A revolution is a full circle. It's a 360 taking you back to the same point you started. And that's exactly where we're going to get with statist style application of thinking that's how we're going to change things in the world by, you know, voting in another ruler, by voting in more rules at all that are man-made rules, are going to take us back to where we started, and in a lot of ways further down the hill, because a revolution, when you're already going downhill, it picks up momentum in a negative way and it takes you into a hole, you know? And we're digging a hole for ourselves by trying to apply more stealing and more robbery to solve problems. So what would it take to change things is my question, in the positive direction. And we see a lot of resistance. And the biggest thing I notice when I'm talking to people, like if I'm wearing a shirt that says anarchy and trying to talk to someone that, you know, they understand there's a lot of problems in the world. They see through a lot of the stuff. Like, we talked about all the things going on during 2020 and pointed them out. And a lot of people I've discussed with have really started to see that over the years since. They're like, yeah, that was a big mess. That was a scam. There was, but do you see the inherent deeper issue that authoritarianism and statism is putting people in a state of slavery? And that's where they get frustrated. And it's not that they don't agree with the concept completely. They just don't see, how do we get from here to there? They're like, so many crazy bad people out there. If we just all of a sudden stopped having government, they're all going to just come take our stuff. You know, that's like the fear out there. And so I feel like an important job of ours being these content creators and speakers about change is how does change happen? How does change actually happen in the world? So I thought maybe we could discuss change a little bit and how it happens in the world. That's an important chapter in my book. Change and death are two things that are constant in this reality that we can count on. Hmm. So I'd like to hear your thoughts on how does change happen, Will?
Yeah, that's a great question. And to add on to that, I see this in the, you know, the truth and freedom communities where people, they have expectations. And I've always said that expectations will always let you down because it's based in relativism. It's the ego trying to say, I want reality to go this way, right? Step by step. They're trying to control it. They're not taking in all these other different factors. Sure, you could use reason and discernment to have a expectation that you are detached from, meaning that you are not emotionally invested in it. So you can have that accurate perception on how you think something is going to work out. But the issue is these expectations people hold, they're so emotionally invested into it that they get let down, almost guaranteed. Keep in mind, like we mentioned, the Renaissance, you know, that was 14th to the 17th century. So we're talking hundreds of years of early Renaissance to late Renaissance. There was, you know, Da Vinci, Galileo, the rediscovery of the Greek languages, Giordano Bruno with Hermeticism. There's all these great people and these rediscoveries, but it was over hundreds of years. So we need to keep that in mind, that one, change is both macro and micro, meaning what are you doing within your own individual life in the lifespan that you have? That's vital, and it is important, and it does matter. But also know that the macro change could take hundreds of years. The slavery of humanity has been going on for thousands of years. It might take maybe just as long to crawl back out. That all depends on individual willpower and the people that activate within their own individual lifespans. So we see this law of this principle of correspondence, right? As within, so without, as above, so below. So change is immutable. It is guaranteed. It's all about the steps that you are going to take. And coming to know that and know your own attributes and your own characteristics. I think when we first start to become, when we activate and we get on the battlefield and, you know, we're spreading the message digitally and publicly to try to reach as many minds as possible, we do want to see that we are, our message is influencing people and affecting people. And there's many, many different tactics and strategies that we can use to implement to kind of, you know, facilitate that, to increase, to pivot, etc. But understand that this journey of activation for what is right, for what is true, for what is moral, it's a lifelong commitment, right? This is not an egoic subjective choice that, oh, I'm doing this for me, right? Or for myself and for my family and for my daughter. First and foremost, those principles, you're doing it because it is true. You're doing it because it is the right thing to do. And that could take your whole life. It could take the next generations, the next 100 years of fighting this war. that is all up in the air and depends on, obviously, the activation of individuals. So my point is the emotional attachment and the expectations. Have trust and know in yourself, in your own capabilities and attributes. Like, I know what I am capable of. I know my strengths. I also know my weaknesses. I know what I need to work on within my life. I know when I'm getting burned out. I need to, you know, do some self-care. I need to kind of pivot or switch something up when it comes to content creation. This is all part of the discovery and the relationship with ourselves and with the world. It's very animistic, right? Very animistic. And it's very important, these concepts, for someone to think about. I'm sure, you know, Leonardo da Vinci, when he was doing art and science, wasn't really thinking about the, you know, the his change that he was going to affect in the weeks to come or the days to come. He was just activated doing what he is charged to do, and look at the influence that it had, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years later. Same with someone like Giordano Bruno, right? So, which was, you know, persecuted and murdered for the work that he did. Did he stop it? No. He knew what he was doing was right. It was aligned with morality and occult art and science. And he did that, and it inevitably led to his death. So getting over the expectations and the fear of death is a huge step that people need to reconcile and make a choice on.
Yeah, boy, it's amazing you're saying that, because I had that conversation with Sarah Cross. And I think maybe what I'll do is I'll play that interview the week before I play this one with you, because she really, then people can look back at that. She really has had to look death in the face, and kind of like, because of the things she's gone through, and like really pushed through that fear. And there's been different times in my life that have pushed me to varying lengths to have to make sort of like a big choice like that. Like, well, there is some sacrifice in choosing to go forward and do this, what I'm going to do. It's going to cost me a lot of time and energy and money that I don't have, but it's way more important than the alternative. And it often reminds me, to me, the two best metaphors I've talked about in my shows, the never-ending story, when Atreyu has to go through the second gate, which is the mirror gate. And he looks in the mirror gate and he sees Sebastian, the little kid who was reading the book. And to me, that symbolizes us looking inside of ourself. And we see the image of ourself that we want to be, like you were saying. I want to be, and all my friends and family, I want them to be like, oh, Chris is such a great guy, and he's so cool, and he looks great. And, you know, we want people to see us the way we want them to see us. But the truth is, when we look inside and do that shadow work, the real mirror of the self, it's like, if the other allegory is Luke Skywalker, when Yoda sends him down into the cave and he sees Darth Vader there, and he cuts off Darth Vader's head, and then he looks down and it's his face on Darth Vader. And it's the same allegory. It's saying that first we have to conquer our own demon inside of ourselves and pass that. And we can't, a lot of people get stuck there and you want to spend the rest of their life like, how am I going to make myself a better person? How am I going to be more healthy? How am I going to be what I want to be? How am I going to be more comfortable? Which is great, but that's only the second gate. You haven't even got to the next gate yet. And the next gate, when you step through, it's letting go of the personal egoic desires and wishing, and putting your arms to the divine all of humanity, the future of all life, and saying, what do you need from me? What kind of gift do I have inside that I can contribute to the greater all, which is what I call the one great work? And so I would like you to talk a little bit about the one great work. What does that mean, Will?
Absolutely. The one great work of ending slavery on this planet to influence the minds. Well, first and foremost, right, it's doing the great work, which is the internal process of development and deprogramming oneself from deception and the falsities, like you were saying, walking through those gates, right? And that is an ongoing process. It's almost like it comes in stages. I say that because the mindset of purism and perfection is rampant, especially nowadays in, you know, the truth and freedom communities. People want, you know, they want to be perfected in this certain sense before they even activate and start. So that internal work of understanding what the truth is of our condition, of the human condition on this planet, understanding that it is slavery due to the belief in human authority over others, right? And that natural law exists and it brings us the consequences of our free will choices. Once we understand that within ourselves and we align, start that journey of aligning our own actions to objective morality, then we need to understand that others need to do the same thing because it has a quantum effect, meaning numbers matter, right? As the aggregate of society starts to shift to become more moral, then we start to see freedom. And in the inverse, immorality, obviously, the effect of that is the condition of slavery in society and on the planet. So we need minds. We need numbers. So logically, you need to speak. You need to talk about the truth. You need to talk about the causal factors of change, the dynamics that create freedom. And we do that in our age, the modern age, we do that through the internet, through modern technology. Almost, you know, 98% of people nowadays that have, you know, awakened to what is going on to some level, they've got to that level from some type of modern technology, whether it be videos, PDFs, the internet somehow, right? Or even books too, right? But the majority of it is modern technology through the internet. So the one great work is activating and becoming the voice for truth and for what is right and spreading that message of natural law, objective morality, and the dynamics of change. That is what the one great work is. It is great work because it will take everything that you have, willpower and care, to try to put yourself out there, to create that message, and try to influence the minds of programmed and conditioned people to give up their religious ideologies of violence that they are clinging onto like a safety blanket, right? That is hard work to do, to tell someone that they are wrong because of what they believe and how they are acting, and they are contributing to the condition of slavery. And that can be done in an unlimited, you know, amount of expressions and ways and pathways. But it's through the digital pathway and the individual activation that is the one great work. So, and this aligns very much like what we were talking about with the Renaissance, right? You talked about the printing press. Well, what did the printing press and creating books do for, you know, the 14th century? It started to break down the monopoly on the church. Now, sure, that you could say that led to other type of governmental institutions, but it had an effect of breaking down a control structure, right?
Yeah,
just as
out.
The internet and decentralization of knowledge today will break down the state, the media, the illusion of authority.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was one of the chapters of the book. I really break down that or bring up, you know, Martin Luther putting his thesis on the door of the Catholic Church and basically telling the people, like, hey, they've been telling you all this time that you have to talk to their priests to talk to God, but it says right here in the book, which you can read yourself now that we have it translated, you don't need to go to them. Yep. That you can speak directly to God. And, you know, I think a lot of people must have known that deep down all along, but hearing him say that, it galvanized and changed the masses of people to really recognize that that is the case. And to me, these people we're talking about are a really good example. And when we're talking about change, change starts very small. And in our minds, when we think about change, we're like, oh, how could we possibly go from here to there? But like, think about the smallest things, opening a door, opening a window. When you first start opening it, it's only a crack. All these people in history we talk about, the movements, the changes, it started out with one or two people often just one person who wrote some things down and started saying them loudly, emphatically. And then another person or two gathered around that person, be like, he's right. You know, listen to this guy, you know, listen to this gal. Mm-hmm. And that's how change happens. It doesn't happen where like a billion people all at once just go, you know what? We all just realized something. How do they realize something? Because someone was talking about it. Because the door got cracked open, because the window got cracked open. And I mean, recently we were watching on Netflix, Leslie and I, this thing called The Last Tsars. And it's about this Russian Tsar named Nicholas. And he was like one of the last ones. And this is at the time of Rasputin. And he's an interesting character where this Rasputin guy was like a sexual pervert, basically. Real kind of an asshole character. And he kind of slimed his way into the very top, working for the Tsar, because he was the only one that could heal the Tsar's son, who was hemophiliac. And he created this relationship. And so during this time, the Tsar just made all kinds of terrible choices. He was involved in this huge losing war, costing thousands of lives, thousands of Russian lives, because of his poor choices, one after the other. The public completely lost their... any faith or pride they once had in their government and their system was gone. It was shot. People were in a straight up revolution all over the place. And when you hear these stories and read about it, there were still situations where there was people whose jobs was to hold the guns and to be the guards. But it was their family out on the street that were hungry and out of food and due to all the stupid things. And they were starting to be like, you know what? I don't think I want to be on this side of the line anymore. I'm going to turn around and go join the crowd because there's more of them than there are of us now. But you can imagine as this fomented, it went on for a long time and it took a lot of abuse, thousands and thousands of people dying and going hungry and starving, getting killed for nothing before people finally got to that point where they were pissed off, frustrated, at the end of their wits to revolt. And it's like, you know, there was Lenin, these different leaders that popped up that people wound up following that led them in terrible directions. But that was because they didn't have their own internal drive and they didn't have they weren't aligned on the real true principles. I'm sure there were probably a few, but not enough. It wasn't advertised loudly enough. Not enough people grabbed a hold of that. And the same with the French Revolution. The same guys that started it were cutting each other's heads off, and they all got their heads chopped off before the end. Even their a lot of their whole movement was started by Thomas Paine, who, when he came over and talked to them in person, they put him in jail and they were going to cut his head off. You know, so how do we start making change but staying with the cornerstone of a purity of principle? That's where it gets tricky. So I was curious if you had any thoughts on that. You know, how do we do it right this time?
Yeah, those are great points. And we see how certain individuals, I mean, for sure, one person can influence the planet. We've seen this in history. You've mentioned people. I mean, Thomas Paine, Nikola Tesla, right? These are individuals that had profound influence and have shaped where we're at today and in certain aspects. So that can happen. Right. But obviously, to speed that up, more individuals activating and, you know, with that voice of truth and amplifying that message has a more steadfast and a better implementation for sure. 100%. We think about kind of going back to what I said about expectations. Even the one great work, people think, oh, I need to do what Will and Chris are doing as far as, you know, having my own podcast, doing my own presentations, and using your voice and your face is profound, and it is a great tool that needs to be utilized. But that's not every aspect that has to be activated, right? There's publications, there's marketing, right? Which all marketing is psychology. It's magic. Right. I mean, there's promotions, there's all these different gears and wheels in the machine of running, you know, a platform or anything, right, that we need help with. People don't understand, like what you were mentioning earlier, listing all these things that I do. I'm create all my own content. I run all of this stuff. Same with like Mark Passio, right? He's a one man band. He has, you know, helpers that come in that help him with certain things, but it's not like InfoWars where you have Alex Jones and then he's got a team of 30 people that are helping InfoWars, you know, propagate. We don't have that. We could, and we should have that. And again, that stems back to individuals activating, making that choice, like you said, with the window. It starts with a thought. You have that thought first, and then you slowly take the action to crack the window before you fully, you know, open the whole thing to let the breeze in. So it's about making that choice and getting involved and activating and understanding, figuring out where you want to contribute, but follow through on that, right? So there's all these different aspects. So people having these expectations of, oh, I have to be this big figurehead, or, you know, I have to be on camera. That might not be your path right now or ever, but still, you might be really good with writing letters or you know, newsletters, or you might be very tech savvy, or better yet, you understand code and you can generate some type of program or software that can make it more, you know, versatile for us to put out the message of truth and freedom, because the software and the applications nowadays are complete shit and garbage. Those are the tools by which we use on the digital battlefield. If those are broken or restrained or constricted in some form or fashion, that's like being on the battlefield without, you know, your pick and shovel or your gun. It's broken, right? So these are all aspects that people need to consider that they can get involved in and contribute. Again, it starts from that choice of saying, yes, I want to get involved, and then taking the step onto the path. And so, and that is hard for a lot of people, and that's where that internal work comes into.
But the little things are the big things. And, you know, when I think back to before I started podcasting, podcasts did change my life. And like you were saying, technical aspects, like I started listening to all kinds of podcasts. I was working for the Superior Court at the time, so I had a government job, and I'm listening to Mark Passio in my ear, and I'm listening to Dan Carlin tell stories about hardcore history. I'm listening to anything I can get my hands on. Freeman Fly was a big one back then, and I contributed money to his podcast. I had a membership. Dan Carlin, I bought, you know, 50 or 100 episodes because I appreciated what he brought to me. You know, I'm still wearing these shirts of Passio's that I must have bought 10, 20 shirts back then, because I wasn't doing a podcast yet. And I knew I needed to contribute to the people that were doing the work. And yet, you know, like here I am. In fact, even my service, EndEvil.life, it goes through Nathan Frazier's business, Blast Pod, that he started way back then when he was doing Living Free FM podcast. In all these years, I've supported him because he creates a website server where I can run my podcast through. And so in all this time, I have right now 98,300 downloads. So 98,000, almost 100,000 people have downloaded episodes from the End Evil podcast. I want it to keep happening. Are you going to spend 5 minutes and do some exercise every morning? Because really, that's what it takes to change, is something very small. That's the way I did these things. I started setting aside an hour every week to work on my podcast, 2 hours a week, 3 hours. That's all it takes to get going. And then you keep with it and you keep doing it. And then, you know, in the same way with exercise, some of the, all the most positive changes I made in my life were incremental, just starting to do a little bit each day. The One Great Work Warriors, we meet once a week for 1 hour, an hour and a half. And we create an episode every week. So you don't have to be the one on the camera, you know, but we all need help. We all need people. You know, Jerry from the One Great Work Warriors, for like a solid year now, he's done all my uploads for free. You know, yeah. I kicked him down a little bit of money when I could, but not much. He's been uploading every single episode on 4, 5, 6 different channels, because he wants to be part of the One Great Work, because he wants to do what's right, because he cares about this stuff with his heart. And so, you know, my heart goes out to Jerry. He's like, you know, I mean, I get the shivers just thinking about it. And Will, how much time you've spent, you know, being in there in the background, making sure that connection happens to the One Great Network, or just always being there. If I'm doing a roundtable, like being willing to jump in and talk at the last moment, even on your way home from work or whatever. It's always you make it a priority. And so, I mean, people really, you got to put your heart a little more into this game. Otherwise, you're going to get at the end of your life and be like, what the fuck did I do with my time and my life? Was it just selfish and comfort-based? Or did I actually do some things that make me feel good about myself? And at the heart of it, that's my message, is to motivate and inspire you to feel good about who you are, to feel like you see yourself as a hero. And so I know you've had a struggle in your life, Will, like going from earlier parts in your life when you were kind of more caught up in your own ego and the play of the public, and you transitioned into this more heart-based, empathetic person. I'm curious what you could say about finding how to see with your heart and finding your way towards that empathy and care.
Yeah, dude. I mean, you nailed some really good points that people really need to consider. Because that lack of care and value within the truth and freedom community speaks volumes. When people don't, you know, and forget about attaching a number to it, right? A dollar is showing something, is showing that you care. I've contributed, I've donated, I've bought shirts. This is Sean McCann's. I have N Evil shirts. I buy books from anyone that comes out there. It's not about the material aspect of it. It's the energetic aspect of it, right? It's about becoming a good person and someone that cares about the achieving freedom in the world, right? And activating and contributing. All we have to do is look and see the content creators that are actually talking about natural law and true freedom and the dynamics of change. How much help and support do they get? How many shares, just sharing a video or a presentation, do they get? It's piss poor. And that speaks volumes that the majority of people within these communities don't give a fuck. And that breaks my heart. Right. But it also shows that where they're at and what they care about. And I'm grateful for all the donations, the support, even the shares, that the messages that I get. That is awesome. Right. But it is minuscule comparative to what it should be and where it can go and where it needs to go. It's, you know, and Mark's talked about this kind of stuff, and he is absolutely right on everything that he talks about within these communities and the lack of care and the lack of involvement. And we're not going to achieve what we say we want without support and help and people activating and getting on that battlefield in some form or fashion. So that's why you need to erase and let go of these expectations and do that work. And that's the problem, right? For most people, this type of content and information is intellectual masturbation, right? The conspiracy theories of the ego wanting to be in the know. Oh, I know the next new thing, or I know more than these people. That's something that's feeding the ego, right? But do you know why we are in this situation? Do you know the solutions to get out of that, to eradicate that problem, to solve that problem? That's what it means to be a Renaissance man. Right? Using reason to rebirth from slavery to stepping on the path of true freedom for all. That is what we need. We're trying to spark the revival of a renaissance, and it starts in that mentation 100%.
Yeah, and it's a constant, like you said, birth and rebirth. I don't know how many times I've sat here and, like I said, like I was just doing, I get this a little bit of emotion sometimes. Like, I look at how many people have checked out the show. I look at how many times I've done this work and how little I've gotten back from people in terms of interaction or help. But then I look at the people that have helped and have given back, and that's just like, it makes my heart so proud, because those people are really standout, amazing people. And I do appreciate it. You know, I probably would have been harder to keep going if there wouldn't been someone come along like Will, or someone like Jerry or Leslie, you know, these people that I found. But you only find these people by putting yourself out there. And so I ask myself, you know, sometimes like when I go through those emotions, I've even several times been like, I'm going to quit doing this podcast. I'm sick of it. It's not working. You know, like I'll get dejected sometimes. I'll be sad with how many people don't react or reply or see it. And then I'll go through this whole mental process, like, why am I doing this? And then I'll remember, like, oh, this is not just for everybody. It's for me, too. It's for my soul. So I feel good about myself knowing that I'm trying to do something right. And so I'll go back to it. And then I'll ask myself, okay, instead of being mad at people, use your heart. Why are people stuck? Why are people not taking that step? Why are they not getting active? Why are they not contacting me? Why are they not sharing a slide? Why are they not donating a little bit? Why are they not doing these things? And I realized that people are lonely inside of their heart. They're afraid. And they don't see the path from A to B. They're unsure, right? And so a lot of times that's because of health problems. They're dealing with health issues that are totally distracting and financial issues. And they feel like as soon as I get this health problem and this financial issue settled and this relationship problem, then maybe I can start doing some of that stuff. You know, I get it. So I ask myself, what can I do to help people with those problems so they can be more whole people? And so that's why I talk about, how do we get through relationship issues? How do we improve ourselves physically? How do we improve our mental, physical self-defense tactics? And so I think for the rest of the show, I'd like us to kind of just talk about tactics, life tactics to improve your being as a human being. How do you make yourself a better Renaissance man or woman? And so the first thing I would bring up is exercise. If you're not doing some kind of daily exercise, you're destroying your body at this point. Because you're getting hit with poisons all around in the sky, in the water, and likely in the food you're drinking and eating, drinking food and eating water, hopefully. But yeah. So, Will, what do you got to say about that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely, man. When you understand, when someone understands the war that we are in, right, that even people's expectations of what war is, they think it's, you know, something from the historical past, right? But no, we're in this new technological warfare where it is being directed at all angles, you know, thought, emotion, the physicality, where your physiology is being attacked on a daily basis, whether that be through, you know, dirty electricity, EMFs, radiation, the microplastics, the endocrine disruptors, the pharmaceuticals in the water, you know, it's on every level. And sure, that could be a black pill for someone. And you know what? It needs to be at first. People need to understand the dark aspects of society. Now, don't get stuck there. Don't crawl into a hole. You need to ask yourself, just like a Renaissance man would, okay, if that's the problem, what's the solution? And it's certain aspects that you're talking about. Obviously, the internal dialogue with yourself for the thoughts, emotional balancing and stabilization techniques. And there's a bunch out there. Exercise, you know, focus on the elements of breath, water, earth, exercise, right? The sustenance that you take in. All of these things need to really be pondered and applied with introspection. And even the fiat currency, that medium that we are using in this current age of money, that representation of your energy, what are you using that towards, right? Are you buying shitty food, right? Are you buying your, you know, your Starbucks every day when you could do something different? Do you not have filtration on your shower head? Like we can run down these endless aspects, but these are things that the individual need to think about and need to act on. And it's really important. So it's almost twofold, right? The one great work, yes, it is expressing and promoting a message publicly. But there's also the physicality of keeping our own individual bodies in alignment and safe and healthy, right, at all times. Because if the receiver, the body, the vessel is broken or damaged or not working at optimal capacity, you think your message is going to be clear? You think you're going to have any kind of moral clarity as well? They go hand in hand. So it is very important to understand that dance of being healthy, that it is all on all planes, thoughts, emotion, and the physicality. So these are aspects that people really need to consider and act upon 100%.
I think of it like a boat sometimes. I remember having kind of like one flash of realization years ago. I did go on a cruise, and I was thinking about how a boat is a perfect metaphor for that, because like if your body, if your physical body and even your mental stability are off course, or there's a hole, like a hole in your boat, you know, the water's coming in, you're not really going to be able to float very far until you deal with that hole in your boat. And so if your holistic self isn't whole, you know, if it has a hole in it, it's not whole, you're
holy.
You're not going to the destination. And that's even more so true in terms of working with other individuals. What I've seen online, social, like you can't even almost be part of chats, because there will inevitably be some really lowbrow, low-minded person that will get in there and start attacking and ridiculing people, or trying to make other people look bad for whatever reason. And that's just the culture of the world we're in. There's probably hired goons, and then there's people with various mental problems, either sociopaths or narcissists, or somewhere in between the two. They're starting to get to be moral relativists, basically. And they think it's okay to do what the state does, which is, you know, attack and ridicule people when you don't like what their point is, or, you know, try to talk over people louder, you know. And so just like a boat, if you want to start a project with another person, like if Will and I were going to start doing a podcast together, first, you got to sit down and make sure you're really on the same page with principles with this person. And that's where I really attribute the success of One Great Work Warriors, is that we really took that time up front. And we've several times had to stop and be like, wait, what are our principles here? And I really appreciate Brandon Spencer on that, because he's been like a rock, you know. Anytime we start to sway from what we talked about, he'll bring it up without fear. And a lot of life is not just being nice. It's calling things out when they need to be called out, and not losing your shit doing it, but staying calm and saying, look, this is what we decided. This is what we agreed upon. And so if you join a group and the group rules are, hey, let's not call each other names, and then somebody in the group starts calling names and no one calls them out, no one stops it, it's just going to be a shit show from there on. Mm-hmm. So being part of a group online is not really necessarily a productive thing to do. And in fact, more often than not, it turns out to be the opposite. It takes personal interaction and accountability and responsibility and an agreement on core principles to move anything forward. So that's the last thing. Absolutely. I wanted to make. And whatever time we have left, I'd like you to comment on that, Will, and then we'll transition into, I'd like to talk about your business and how that might help people, the products you're putting out there. So we'll transition into that next.
Oh, absolutely. Fantastic, man. Yeah, to add to, you know, to what you were just saying, I actually just released a quote a little bit earlier. It says, truth seeking without action is spiritual voyeurism. Awareness must evolve into responsibility. Now, that's a great quote, and it aligns with what you were just saying, especially in the artificial constructs of social media, where people act a certain way. Most likely, they wouldn't act like that in the natural world face-to-face with someone. So collaborating and networking is important, and it's not just about someone saying they understand moral principles or first principles or, you know, in alignment with natural law. It's about proving that. And how do we prove it? We prove it through action. So patterns speak volumes. It's like, you know, that's great. You say you understand morality, you have good ethics, but I want to see it. right? So there is that level of discernment and judgment upon others. And it's not about their personal preferences. It's about how they act, the type of person they are, and how they act in the world. And that needs to be held to a high standard. Because, you know, we see a lot of degenerates in these communities, in these groups that come in and they're just, you know, projectile vomiting all their insecurities and their incompetence into the group itself. And those are patterns that people need to recognize, need to see, and stop feeding those type of people, because that is just distraction, misdirection, and stagnation within the project you are doing, within the greater message of truth and freedom, and the path that we are trying to go to create freedom itself. So yeah, absolutely, man. That's what it really means to be on the same page with someone. And this is why, you know, projects that we have done, the funnel, they've had a level of success. We've followed through. We've surpassed even our expectations, right? Because of we act as we say, our whole group. And that is what it really means to collaborate and network. And that's how we can succeed in not only projects, but community as well, right? You can't have a community that says, oh yeah, we understand objective morality, but, you know, majority of the people or some of the people in there are, the actions they take are immoral, unethical, or creating disruption. So for sure.
Yeah, it's a tricky balance. And then the last thing I want to say in that is that keep in mind too, folks, that there are hired goons out there. Homeland Security, CIA, you got to know that if we're talking about freedom and we're saying that government is the root of all slavery, they're going to be keeping an eye on us to an extent and any groups we form. And those groups will be infiltrated without exception, I think. And you should expect that there will be people posing as people that are actually agents in freedom type groups. Why would they not do that? They've done that all through history and they're good at it. And there's even been famous authors and actors that are on the payroll that we probably don't even know about, you know, as well as the ones we have known about from 40 or 50 years ago. Some of that stuff's out there now. So you look back and you see like this kind of stuff's been going on a long time. And it's going on now, too, more than ever. So don't let yourself get all caught up in the social media drama. That's not where the battle's at.
Yeah. People need to observe others. Observe what someone talks about often. Observe what they do, right? And those patterns will reveal themselves, and they speak volumes 100%.
Right. Yeah. Look back through all Will's work, look back through all my work and find a place where we spend a whole episode criticizing some other content creator, you know, to make ourselves feel better. You'll never find it because it doesn't exist.
That's right.
All our work is geared towards from the heart. How do we be working towards freedom? And not to say we're perfect. We're not. I got a lot of things about myself that can use improvement. And when it comes to a personal one-on-one, someone I care about, trust, like Will, if you were to give me some, you know, critical things about, you know, here's what you could work on, I would take it to heart, you know.
Absolutely.
But some random schmuck online who doesn't even share their full name, fuck them.
That's right.
They might not even be real. So don't let your heart and your energy be wasted, you know. So put it into something valuable.
There's so much jealousy and that purist mentality that I've mentioned. People, oh, I'm better than you. You need to be like me. You need to be like this. You need to be like that, right? They're acting like a fucking statist is what they're doing, right? So it's not about being better than someone. It's about being real and authentic and have integrity and action.
Yeah, set the good example.
That's right.
So, I wanted to transition. It's been, I think, 5 months I've been using hydrogen therapy now. Leslie and I were able to get that larger machine when you guys first came out with it, with Ostara. And we keep it right where we chill, you know, like at the end of the day, we like to spend an hour or two together and sometimes watch a show or an interview or something. And we just take turns having the hydrogen therapy running with a little calendula in your nose, which feels like a little bit at first, like you're in the hospital or something, but you just get used to it, a little mm-hmm. tickle. And it's been, you know, it's not the type of thing where I had a specific ailment. I'm a pretty healthy guy, but I have noticed the longer using that thing that a lot of the little things that used to bother me around my body aren't just kind of not there. And just kind of like have an overall better sleep every night when I do use that machine. And I'm really excited to see you guys are just starting to put out the advertisements and share the information about the smaller hydrogen water bottle. So please talk a little bit about Ostara and how that might help people with health. And it's just one more thing to work on.
Yeah. Awesome, man. Yeah, no, I appreciate that. So Ostara Hydrogen Therapy, this is a platform and a business that my partner Logan Hart and I we started, and we're all about, our mission statement is about awareness, access, and activation. So it's the awareness, educating people on what molecular hydrogen therapy is correctly, because there's a lot of misdirection and incorrect information out there. So educating the public on H2 therapy, giving them access, meaning that, you know, we ourselves embody truth and integrity, even within this venture that we are doing. So access, having affordable and options for people to apply and utilize hydrogen therapy in many forms, right? So having products, devices that generate the H2 gas. And then activation is opportunity, meaning that they themselves can get involved in generating resources for themselves by selling these products, spreading the awareness, etc. So a little background, Logan has been aware of hydrogen therapy for a couple years. I've been using and been in the awareness of molecular hydrogen for slightly over 13 years. It was introduced to me as hydrogen-rich water 13 years ago when I was trying to seek alternative and more holistic pathways. And an acquaintance of mine back then introduced it to me, and it had profound benefits for an autoimmune condition that I was suffering with back then. And so from there, educated myself, been following the research and the science, got involved with some other organizations back there to sell devices and see the profound effects that it had on, you know, cancer patients, diabetes, liver issues, cognitive disorders, dementia, Alzheimer's, this kind of stuff. So the first step is understanding what molecular hydrogen is. Molecular hydrogen is a form, is a molecule from hydrogen. Hydrogen is the most abundant element in the universe, over 95%. And actually, if you want to go even deeper than that, almost everything is a certain compound generated from hydrogen itself. So yes, I say hydrogen, people think of water, H2O. They think of something that is explosive. And there are four forms of hydrogen itself. So molecular hydrogen is two hydrogen atoms bonded together, and they create a stable molecule. Sure, it is flammable up to a certain percentage, 6% concentration. The devices and the application for hydrogen therapy is at 2%. So it is not flammable. But this natural modality has a profound effect on the body. It's considered an antioxidant, but it's not a traditional antioxidant. It is selective, meaning that it goes through the body because it's the smallest molecule. It can penetrate every aspect of the body, even the cellular, the cells and the mitochondria, so getting down to the RNA and the DNA, and it neutralizes the most harmful free radicals in the body. These free radicals are the cause of what inflammation and oxidative stress that leads to disease in the body and all these ailments. So it's completely natural. The body itself generates molecular hydrogen in the gut, right? This is why it's good to take your fiber. But when you take molecular hydrogen at a certain concentration and a certain level of saturation, it literally can go through your body and it aids the body in doing what the body wants to do, and that is heal itself. So it is an optimal tool for the body. And it's, I mean, the studies, the research, they're growing almost weekly now. When I first knew about it, there were about, I would say, 1,500 studies 13 years ago, or well over 3,500 studies. And there's therapeutic benefits on every organ of the body. So it's not about what it can help. It can help everything. Everything by the nature of what it is, that it is small, it can neutralize the harmful free radicals in the body. So it's a tool for the body to do what it does best and heal itself. Here in the West, the awareness of molecular hydrogen is exponentially low comparative to the East. In the East, in the Asian countries, even India, but, you know, Japan, Taiwan, Korea, China, they've been using hydrogen therapy for many, many years. The therapeutic effects of hydrogen therapy have been known since the 1700s. The breakthrough studies and the scientific discoveries have been happening primarily in the early 1900s, where, even hyperbaric chambers use molecular hydrogen to combat the bends with deep sea divers. So it's a profound, natural, therapeutic aspect. And our primary goal is to give that opportunity for people to get safe, efficient devices for people to use, right, to get that therapy. And something about OSTAR hydrogen therapy is that we have multiple levels. We have something like an entry level, which would be a water bottle. And sure, these are extremely trendy right now. You can see it is generating molecular hydrogen gas in there. This is an entry level, but one thing about our products, and that we are very much into the science and the components, is that this is a pressurized bottle. You don't find this type of bottle on something like Temu or Amazon. So we are very picky, and it took us over a year to dial in even the manufacturers and the components and the devices that we were comfortable and know produce a certain level of H2. So I know that was a big long-winded rant, but it's important for people to understand what we are talking about. Molecular hydrogen is not alkaline water. It is not Kangen water. It is not structured water. It is not charged water. It's none of those things. It is simply molecular hydrogen gas that you can breathe through inhalation, like a device that Chris has. Chris actually has the flagship, which makes both. It makes water and inhalation gas. So you can breathe it, you can dissolve it into water, and you can bathe in it, or, you know, spray it on your skin to take it topically. So those are the modalities. So that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the most abundant element in the universe, hydrogen.
Is that also, I heard for years people talking about Brown's gas. Is that the same as this machine does?
Yes and no. Brown's gas, that term is a branding term. What Brown's gas is, it's oxyhydrogen. So it is the mixture of H2 gas and O2 and oxygen.
Okay.
Our machines do that as well, because we are using an advanced form of electrolysis. It's called proton exchange membrane. It has multiple chambers, and it uses the median of like distilled water to separate and generate breaks down the components of water of hydrogen and oxygen, and it separates those into its chambers. So something like our inhalation devices, you can actually direct those chambers to breathe them both at the same time. So you can do pure oxygen if you want. You could do pure hydrogen, or you can mix them into oxyhydrogen, right? And that is what people, some people call Brown's gas. So that's cool. Something to add clarity when they say, oh, is it Brown's gas? It's oxyhydrogen. Brown's gas and these other things like Kangen water, these are marketing terms that a certain manufacturer or product have used.
Awesome. Okay, yeah. So we're that helps because I'd heard that term too, and I wanted to make sure people knew.
Yeah, but so, it's good to know that when someone that is using Brown's gas, what is the therapeutic component? It's molecular hydrogen. That's right. What it is.
And our good friend Brandon Martin, a lot of people might know, he's using this same technology because he's battled with some health stuff as well.
Yes.
And so he seems to be having some really good results and has been talking it up as well. So you need a real world person to talk to. He might be someone to check with if you know him. And how do we go about if people want to look at your products or they're interested in this new smaller product, how do we go about directing people towards that?
Yeah. OstaraHydrogen.com. That is our website. And again, the principles of our mission statement, awareness. Logan and I have created a podcast called Healing with Hydrogen. You can get there from that website. Highly recommend people work your way through those. It's 10 episodes. We've taken high-level scientific stuff, and we've simplified it, right? So to spread the awareness of correct knowledge, there's so many people that, you know, talk about this certain category and they don't know what they're talking about, even on general chemistry. It's like, you got to know those basics. You got to understand that truth. And so they can go there and they can get educated. And then of course we have multiple, levels of products, something like a water bottle, which does produce a high level of therapeutic dose of molecular hydrogen at a lower cost. And then again, if you're someone that has a pre-existing condition, a serious ailment, or you're just, you know, a health buff and you want the top of the line tool, you can go something with like an inhalation device, which we have two options. Ultimately, we want people to get to the inhalation level. When you are breathing the hydrogen gas, you're taking it in its natural state. It's immediately it goes through the body, through the lungs, into the blood brain barrier immediately, versus water. It obviously goes down the throat, it goes into the gut, then it goes into the intestines, and then it expands and goes into the liver and then all throughout the body from there. But when you take it in gas form, you could take it at a higher concentration. There is no cytotoxic limit when it comes to hydrogen, meaning you could breathe it all day and night. And there's no negative side effects. We do have clients that breathe, they do the inhalation as they sleep. So they do a full eight or 9 hours, and they breathe that, and they have profound effects from that. Now, again, if you're someone that doesn't have a pre-existing condition, well, I'll say this first. If you do, the effects you will see will be very upfront, and you can notice the effects potentially on day one. Or very soon. If you're someone like Chris that is relatively healthy, the effects can be subtle, but that doesn't mean he's not benefiting from that. Again, you need to look at H2 as an optimum tool for the body to eradicate and neutralize toxicity. H2 is it's an antioxidant. It's a selective antioxidant. It's anti-cancer. It's anti-EMF, anti-radiation. It's anti-obesity, anti-tumor. All of these things, the list goes on and on. You can go to our website, educate yourself. We have hundreds of studies that people, you know, if they're very analytical and they want to actually read the scientific studies, everything is categorized by case study, by ailment or illness, human study. They can go through there. They can get to that on the resource tabs of our website. And yes, Chris, for sure, there's a discount code that we can use for your podcast. We're doing a launch sale on all of our products And so not only are you getting a huge discount on all the products, we're going to do an additional discount code so you can get an additional 10% for people listening to Chris's podcast, the End Evil podcast, at checkout. You'll get an additional 10% off on top of the launch sale discounts. So that's something for people to do. And I want to say this, because believe it or not, when Logan and I, we launched Ostara Hydrogen Therapy, we actually got haters from the quote-unquote anarchy freedom community. And it was mind-blowing that someone that understands sovereignty and right livelihood, or supposed to understand right livelihood, and should understand the battle and the attack that we are having on our physiology, on our bodies and minds as well, are mad because we are, you know, venturing into this type of business.
Yeah.
And we are trying to, as we launch, we are trying to give such a low base level deal, mainly for our communities. We're trying to educate people like, look, this is what H2 is. This is how it can benefit you. We're trying to give you the access and the opportunity to get in and get a killer deal before we even start going public and promoting, which we haven't even really done to a certain high level, to a certain extent. So we're trying to offer these deals while we can, and also the affiliate program giving people opportunity to just recommend it. Word of mouth, you get paid for that. No MLM BS bullshit. It's just direct sales. You recommend, someone uses your code, you get paid for that. That's it. So opportunity on generating resources. And, you know, it's good. We've gotten a lot of support. And we appreciate that. And the haters are just going to hate. That's just how it is.
Yeah, we'll put a link with this episode on endevil.life. And then on the live show, I'll put it in the chat. And yeah, I mean, there's always going to be people out there. Every time I've talked about money in any form, you know, usually there's someone who thinks that, oh, no one should ever give you money. It's like the same people that are probably out there shopping at Target or buying things at McDonald's and then don't understand how hard it is to do the things that we're doing, that you do have to find a way to keep a roof over your head and keep gas in your car to get to the gas station and stuff. And that requires some type of industry or business. And when you become a freedom speaker, you realize the more I want to do this freedom stuff, I have to find a way to fund the time I spend doing this and the websites and the technology that I have to have. I put thousands of dollars into my technology, and that means every day I got to go out there and work and build stuff to keep a little bit of money coming in to keep this stuff happening. So that's why I tell people on the podcast, well, if you contribute a little bit to the show, you know, or this business venture, buy a book or whatever, that's that much less time I got to spend out there hammering on nails in the field, and more time I can be in here creating awesome content for you guys. And the same is true of Will and Logan, you know, support their business. Their business supports your health, and your money goes into people that are putting a huge percentage of their time towards your well-being and the well-being of your children and grandchildren and all of humanity. So
that's
it's
right.
It's really a very, it's not like a greedy corporate bullshit that you're already putting money into. You're still spending money at the DMV, most likely, you know, come on.
Buying groceries, just living. It is a mind virus, right? It's a religious mind virus that people need to understand. They don't know because they're not activated and doing the one great work, right? That your computer, to have a good, efficient computer, is going to cost up to $2,000. Your camera tech is going to break down. You need to replace. So as the fantastic work that you have done, Chris, thus far, absolutely. If you could do that full time, right? If you had more time and the resources.
Man, I'd be creating animations and movies and all kinds of stuff, you know? But
it would double the output. Same with me as well. Mm-hmm. I want to do the one great work to the highest level as possible. And time is a currency, right? That we have. We need these resources. So if I can give someone a health tool to increase their vitality and their health to fight against to have defense against the attacks that we are going on and do the one great work. Those go hand in hand, like we talked about in this episode, right? Mm-hmm. They go hand in hand, the physiology of health and the message.
Shit, look at nature, symbiotic relationships, you know, like instead right. of one species preying on the other, we're creating a symbiotic. And a lot of other podcasters and truth speakers I've seen out there, especially in the health field, have done that same thing. They open a store, they sell products that they've researched themselves to their customers, and that helps run their show so they can keep doing putting out the information. So it's a very reciprocal kind of you help me, I help you kind of thing. And then we don't have to put our money into Walmart and Target. We buy stuff from people like Will and Chris. So I encourage other people to, you know, do what you can on your own entrepreneurial journey too, but it's definitely not easy. And it's a hard journey. And one that has really, I've been beating my head against the wall for a few years now, trying to figure out how to free up a little bit more time to do more of the things I love and caring about the future of humanity and this renaissance that needs to really get kicked into gear. So I hope you are inspired and motivated. Those are the two main words I use to drive this podcast is inspiration and motivation. And I hope that that comes across. And I really appreciate your help with that, Will. And I hope people check out ostara.com and check out your work too.
Thanks, Chris. Yeah, appreciate it. Yeah, people can go to ostarahydrogen.com. And, you know, the people that are already that have supported us and are already seeing benefits, which has been, I mean, fantastic. We, Logan and I, are both extremely grateful. And yeah, this is part of the renaissance, right? The creating the agora and that mindset of voluntary exchange and supporting our communities, people that understand rights and freedom. So, you know, again, I always encourage people, go support Chris as well.
Thanks, Will. And much love, folks, for checking us out tonight. Been a great show, and we'll see you next week. Thursdays, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. Evil is the destruction. Thank you.